George Washington, the father of our country, operated on the philosophy of peace through strength. He said the best way to maintain peace is to prepare for war and hopefully not have to go to it. Well, fast forward to today, and we find that America is at a type of war with Iran. For nearly 50 years, Iran, which used to be known as Persia, has been chanting death to America, death to Israel. I mean, every time on Fridays, they would come out of these prayers or even as part of the prayers and just chant this over and over. And then they have succeeded through the years in killing many Americans usually by proxy through Hezbollah or the Houthis or some other outlet. Bill Federer is a best-selling author and a highly sought-after speaker, and he joins us now on Vocal Point to discuss this. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and Bill, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, Jerry. Great to be with you.
Sure. And before we get to Iran and I think some important background information on where we find ourselves in reference to Iran today in modern America, just how about a comment or two about the philosophy that George Washington and I believe other founders had that, look, we don't want to go to war, but sometimes it's necessary and it's the more honorable thing to do. And the best way to deal with it is to be prepared for war so that therefore you have peace.
Right. So people forget that one of the pilgrim ships was captured by Muslim pirates, taken to Morocco and sold into slavery. And at the time our country came into being, we were paying tribute to the Muslim pirates. So every country in Europe had to pay tribute or the Muslim pirates would attack their ships and put their crews in the dungeons of Algiers, Tunis, and Tripoli. So at the beginning of the country, George Washington and John Adams were paying $1.25 million, a fifth of the national budget in the year 1797 was paid to these Muslim Barbary pirates of North Africa so that they would leave our country's ships alone. That's an exorbitant amount of money. Jefferson was the first U.S. ambassador, right, to go over to France, and he meets with the Muslim ambassador, and he asked them what America did to offend them that caused them to want to attack our ships. And Jefferson writes, "The ambassador answered us that it was written in the laws of the prophet in their Quran that all nations who should not have acknowledged Islam's authority were sinners, and it was their right and duty to make war upon them wherever they could be found, and to make slaves of all they could take as prisoners, and every Muslim who should be slain was sure to go to paradise." And so we were delivering all this money over there, and Jefferson gets sworn in as the third president, and the next day he gets a demand from the Pasha of Tripoli for $250,000 extortion tribute payment, or they would declare war on America. And Jefferson said, "I did the only reasonable thing. I sent a squadron of our ships over there, and it's the first Barbary pirate war." You have all the different heroes and Stephen Decatur and the USS Constitution and all the Intrepid, and the Muslims captured the U.S. ship Philadelphia. It's our best ship, brand new. It ran aground on a sandbar. And before they could get free, the Muslim pirates surrounded it and took 300 of our crew captive. And it's interesting. There's a whole series of letters. I actually put them in my book called America's God and Country Encyclopedia Quotations, where Thomas Jefferson is writing to the Congress saying that he's negotiating first with a Trinitarian, Methurian order of priests who have centuries of collecting alms and donations and ransoming prisoners from these Muslim Barbary pirate jails. And he says, "But I have to do it in secret, because if they know that this order is negotiating on the part of a nation, they'll up the price." He says, "And since this is the first time that we're negotiating getting prisoners out, whatever we set, we're going to be stuck with." And then he is negotiating a price, and the Muslim ambassador, I think his name was Abdurrahman, he demands a commission on top of the negotiated price. And then Jefferson writes, he goes, "Those poor 300 prisoners from the U.S. ship Polly, and they're in the dungeons." And he says that I haven't contacted them in a long time, because if I show too much interest, they'll think they're more important and they'll up the price. And so, matter of fact, in history, the Muslims tell the Americans that if they convert to Islam, they can be let out of jail. They all said no, except a couple. And they agreed to be Muslims and get out of jail. Well, finally, when they negotiated the treaty, all these Americans were being let go. And the Pasha of Tripoli asked the ones who had converted if they wanted to go back to America or not. And they said yes. And he says they were dragged out of the room with this look of horror on their face, and they were never seen again. Of course, anybody that knows Islam, you're free to join. You just can't leave. It's very gang-like. So this is America's experience. And then they started the war again in 1814 and 1815 with James Madison as the president. And that's the second Barbary Pirate War. And then thankfully, we get our Navy and our Marines stronger, and we force them into another treaty. And this time they tell Stephen Decatur that write up the treaty as you will, but as soon as you leave the harbor, we will consider it waste paper, because once we regain our strength, we're going to attack you again. And Stephen Decatur said, Muslims are masters of duplicity, willing to make agreements and then break them when they find convenient. And sure enough, that's the Islamic concept of hudna, H-U-D-N-A. And they're forbidden to make treaties with infidels. And so they view Christian countries as infidels. So they're actually forbidden to make treaties. And so to them, it's just a ceasefire. It's crying uncle, so to speak, so that they can restock their weapons and prepare for the next battle. They have no concept of a permanent peace. Their only permanent thing is called the caliphate. So their ultimate goal is a one-world anti-Christian government called the caliphate, led by one Muslim leader called the caliph. And so the word Islam means submission to the will of Allah. A Muslim is one who has submitted, and they think there will be world peace when the whole world submits to the will of Allah. So Islam is the religion of peace. It's just their definition of the word peace is different than ours. Our definition of peace is different groups getting along. Their definition of peace is world Islam. And a moderate Muslim thinks the world will submit to Allah later, maybe in the distant future, maybe at the end of the world. Maybe it's even figurative. And since it's so far off, they really don't think about it. They may not even believe it. They just want to live their lives. And they're happy to enjoy the freedoms of the West and have you as a friend or a neighbor. The small group of fundamental Muslims, they're just as happy to kill a moderate Muslim as they are to kill an infidel, because they view the moderates as having departed from following Muhammad's example. And that brings up another thing, is that Muhammad himself went from being a religious leader for 12 years in the pagan city of Mecca, only makes 70 converts. He gets confrontational. They chase him out of town. He goes north to a Jewish city called Medina, and the Jews let Muhammad in as the first ever Muslim immigrant. He goes into the minority neighborhoods, and he organizes a following. We're familiar with community organizers. And when his following gets big enough, he gets involved in politics, and he pressures the Jews that control Medina into a treaty. Now he's a political leader. And then when his followers in Mecca get confrontational, they get chased out of town. Now there's lots of Muslim immigrants coming into Medina. And Muhammad allows them to rob the caravans headed to Mecca in retaliation for the Meccans chasing them out of town. It's called victimhood. We're the victims. They were intolerant of us. Therefore, we're justified in attacking the caravans headed to them. And so Muhammad gets verses from his Allah that he gets to keep the slave girls as his booty. Another verse says that Muhammad got a fifth of the booty. He would send them off, according to one hadith, saying, do not steal from the booty. And
He gets offended. So, all right. So wait, we're about halfway done, and we still need to get to modern day Iran. Why don't you finish this up about Muhammad, and then we'll transition to Iran. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, so Muhammad allowed his followers to rob caravans, and then he goes back into the city of Medina and more or less kills or enslaves the three Jewish tribes. So Mondami a few weeks ago said, my religion started with Muhammad being an immigrant into Medina. Yeah, and 5 years later, there wasn't a Jew left in Medina. They were chased out, killed, or enslaved. So that is the fundamental Muslim. That's the ones that the fundamentalists view as the example that they should follow. And they view a moderate Muslim as having backslidden from Muhammad's example. And again, the fundamental Muslim is just as happy to kill a moderate as they are to kill an infidel. Now, Iran was had a Qajar dynasty up until World War I, and then you had a secular leader take over named Reza Shah, R-E-Z-A, and he wants to secularize Iran, and he gets rid of the different Islamic dress and the burqas and lets the women get educated, and he's very progressive, very much like Ataturk in Turkey, wanted to secularize Turkey and get rid of the Ottoman Empire. And he said, Mohammedism is nothing more than Arab politics. It may have suited tribes in the desert. It's no good for a modern progressive state. So after World War I, you had these countries wanting to be more moderate. Then World War II starts. And Reza Shah in Iran did not drive out the Germans fast enough. And so Britain and the Soviet Union team up and do a coup. And they get rid of this secular leader, Reza Shah, and they put in Mossadegh. And Mossadegh's the prime minister, and he's okay until after World War II. He begins to side with the Soviets and the Tudor Communist Party, and he becomes anti-Western and anti-American, and he nationalizes the oil industry in Iran. And you say, what's the big deal there? Winston Churchill changed the British Navy from coal to oil, but there's no oil in Britain. So in 1908, Winston Churchill helped negotiate the Anglo-Iranian Oil Company, better known as BP. BP, British Petroleum, is the Anglo-Iranian Oil Company, and they have the largest oil refinery in the world. Anyway, well, Mossadegh, when he, in 1953, turns pro-Soviet, he confiscates all of BP's oil assets. And so there's an oil shortage in England. And that is when Britain appeals to Eisenhower, who approves of Operation Ajax. And we send Kermit Roosevelt Jr. over to Iran, and he helps negotiate or organize a coup to overthrow Mossadegh and put in Reza Pahlavi, the Shah's son.
Wow. And that the Shah's son is even alive today. Literally, we only have a minute and a half. Go ahead and wrap this up, if you would.
Yeah, so Reza Pahlavi loves America, 37 years, fastest growing economy. He's friends with Truman, Eisenhower, Kennedy, Nixon, Gerald Ford, until Jimmy Carter comes along. And Jimmy Carter pulls the rug out from under Reza Shah and ushers in the Ayatollah Khomeini. And the Ayatollah Khomeini kills all the pro-American generals, calls America death to America and the great Satan. And he's a 12er. What's that? Muhammad's son-in-law, Ali, Shi'at Ali is Shiites, had a son named Hussein, and the 12th descendant of that Ali is was 5 years old when he disappeared from history in 874 AD. And the Shiites in Iran, the Ayatollah, think that he's been hiding in a cave for 1,200 years, and that if he can create a world war, then he'll come out of the cave, and their version of Christ, which is our version of the Antichrist, will come to earth, and together they will kill the little Satan, Israel, the big Satan, America. They'll kill all the apes and all the Jews and all the Christians and all the pigs, and they'll set up a one-world Islamic government called the Caliphate. And so where communists have nuclear weapons, but they're not in a hurry to use them, these 12er Shiite Muslims in Iran want to create a world war, because they think it will usher in the end of the world, and they can set up their Islamic global caliphate government led by an antichrist caliph.
Wow. When we're out of time, I'm sure people can get more information at AmericanMinute.com. Bill Federer. Thank you, Bill. All the best.
Thank you, Jerry.